Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? Welcome to the Around the World podcast. I'm your host, Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more in the Around the World podcast. Hey everyone, we have a returning guest for this episode of the podcast, Wang Yi from China. Wang Yi is a really interesting guy, and I last had him on the show about 6 months ago when he was just about to leave on a long journey. Well, he came back to Beijing and we got caught up on what he's been up to. And it turns out that he's done a lot in the last half year. He went up to North Korea for a bit, then he took a train across Russia, and then he went down to Turkey and spent some time in Georgia and Armenia. So we discussed those places and much, much more in this episode. Please welcome Wang Yi. Wang Yi?
Yeah.
Welcome back to my place.
Yes, thank you.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
We recorded one of these, what, 6 months ago, maybe?
Yes.
Yeah. And this morning, we have a special treat that
yeah.
we're trying right now. Some Starbucks coffee.
Yes.
You seem to really like Starbucks.
Yeah, I do.
And Starbucks isn't paying us or anything. It's not a commercial, but it's kind of interesting that you go there so much. I thought we'd talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
What are you, like a gold member or something?
No, I'm green. I'm yet to turn gold.
Oh, there is a gold?
Yeah, there is a gold.
You would think green would be the top, since that's their logo is green.
Oh. Huh.
So that's just the beginning.
I guess there's something
And what does that mean? Like, you're just buying enough coffee from them? That...
Well, oh, I'm yet a green member.
Yeah.
I'm actually welcome level member. I bought 7 coffees, and I think I'm 2 coffees away from green level.
Okay. And yesterday we went out and got some, and the guy at this really fancy Starbucks, like in,
yeah.
In the one of the nicest areas in town.
Yeah, that's actually one of the best 2 in Beijing, and it's one of the reserve stores, and it even has a special theme called Respect for Coffee.
That's the theme of the store?
Yeah, that's the theme of the store.
You have to respect coffee?
Yeah.
But you grind coffee up. You destroy it.
Well...
And then you pour boiling hot water on it. That's not very respectful.
Well, that's the way we do things. Right?
That's the Chinese way?
No. I think everywhere it's... That's just the normal procedure we do with food. We grind them up and we eat them, and we grind them up. Then when they reach our body,
uh-huh.
and then go out.
So we put something in our body,
yeah.
and that makes it respectful. That's the best thing we can do to show our respect.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know what I'm saying here. I'm just kind of shaking from caffeine overload because I've had so much Starbucks.
Wow.
Now you've done quite a lot of traveling since I saw you last.
Yeah.
And we can even make this like a Starbucks theme. Have you gone to Starbucks in every country that you go to?
Every country, there are Starbucks.
Oh, this,
I go.
Yeah. Not every country has them, though.
No. I was in Georgia, and there was a fake Starbucks.
Fake?
It was called, I think it was Spar-ducks.
Spar-ducks?
Yeah.
So you get in a fight with ducks? Huh.
Yeah.
It looks just like Starbucks?
No.
Oh. It's just kind of like...
The taste was a little bit worse.
Okay.
They
don't respect their coffee, then.
No.
So where did you go after leaving Beijing?
I went to north of China.
Yeah.
And then I crossed the border into North Korea for 40 hours and went back.
Yeah. Into North Korea?
Yeah,
in North Korea. Oh, I knew you were talking about that. I didn't know you actually went.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
I thought you know.
No. We talked about it before you left that maybe you would do it, but... So how was it? What did you do?
Well, we went to a bar town. That's co-governed by the Jilin province of China and the North Korean government.
Is this by Dandong?
It's by Yanji.
Ah, all right.
It's actually at the intersection between Russia, North Korea, and China.
Oh, okay.
So I saw Russian business people in our hotel.
And did you go with a tour group or?
Yeah, we were a Chinese tour group.
All right.
And our tour guide and a lot of people in our group agreed that it was a patriotic training for us Chinese.
To go to North Korea?
To go to North Korea.
Why did they say that?
Well, because I guess we have a common history in the past.
Ah,
yeah.
A long history of friendship.
A long history of friendship.
Okay. Any Starbucks in North Korea?
Of course not. We didn't even have coffee in our hotel.
No?
No.
Pretty crappy hotel, or was it?
No, it was so good.
It was nice?
Oh. Yeah. You went to North Korea, almost your hotel.
I did, yeah. I stayed in the one that most of the foreigners stay in,
yeah.
In Pyongyang. It's on an island.
Yeah.
It's the biggest hotel I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, really?
Probably. It's like 45 stories tall.
But was it good?
It was pretty nice.
Yeah.
It was nicer than I expected. The entrance, the foyer, whatever, had big chandeliers, and it looked really nice in a classical way.
Yeah.
Our rooms were, they could have been in a hotel anywhere in the world, really.
Yeah, I think our rooms could be like 4-star anywhere in the world.
Oh, wow. That's
yeah.
That's probably even nicer than the one I stayed in.
Yeah.
No, I have no complaints, though, about the hotel. The really weird thing, though, is it was mostly empty. Like I said, it was the biggest hotel I probably have ever seen.
Yeah.
And we were on, I think, like the 37th story or something, 37th floor.
Yeah.
And we'd take the elevator up, and every now and then the elevator would open on a floor on the way up.
Oh.
And it was just dark, just no electricity on those floors.
Yeah.
And this was in the winter. So a big gust of cold air would come in from
yeah.
the hallway.
Oh.
So it wasn't, most of these floors weren't heated either.
Yeah.
And so we quickly realized that 90% of this hotel is empty.
Yeah.
And no electricity, no heat. And it was just very creepy. Like, I didn't want to get out of the elevator on those floors.
Oh.
I was kind of afraid to walk around. So the rest, the parts that we stayed in, though, were quite nice. And they had heat, and they had electricity.
Well, we didn't have heat.
No heat. What time?
No central heating system. I mean, they have those ACs and Chinese made like fans with a built-in heating.
Oh,
they had those on all the time before we came in.
Yeah, those don't work very well, though, do they?
No.
But what time of year did you go?
I went late March.
So it was maybe a little warmer.
A little warm, but it was still cold, and we were right by a beautiful sea.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
it was wet and cold.
Wet and cold, and
yeah.
Did you sleep all right then?
I slept all right because the light from the heating didn't interrupt me, but most of those older people in our group complained about their sleeping quality.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound very, very great. That's too bad that such a nice hotel wouldn't have, like, central heating.
Yeah.
So what did you guys do?
Well, we... the first thing we did was to pay tribute to their great leader.
Ah, of course. There's some big statues to go
yes.
by to.
Yes. Yeah. And it's high up on a mountain. It's gold.
Oh, is this the famous mountain where Kim Jong-il was supposedly born?
But the I don't think mountain? So. I don't no. think so. It's really... It's really close to Chinese border, and I think they've told us the great leader had came to visit that city for something less than 10 times.
Kim Il-sung? The yeah. first one leader?
I think,
president?
I couldn't remember well, but I think it was their first great leader.
Oh, okay. Well, so you paid your respect. Is that all you did?
Well, that's what I remember the best. Actually, it felt we didn't do much because it wasn't the things we saw, the things they wanted us to see weren't that interesting. It was fine, but it wasn't that interesting. We went to a museum to see North Korean paintings.
Ah, all right. Paintings of the leader?
No.
Or landscapes?
Landscapes.
Ah, all right. That's kind of boring. I like paintings of the leader.
Oh.
I saw a lot of those.
Oh.
Yeah. But you were only in the country, what, for 40 hours? Is that what
yeah.
you said? Oh,
yeah.
not very long.
No.
Just one night?
Yeah, just one night.
Ah, well, then it's who cares if it's not great sleeping conditions. You can handle a night, right?
Yeah, I could.
Yeah.
Maybe not those older people who went with me. They even brought a whole pack of beer with them.
Oh, in from China?
From China.
Oh. Did they share with the North Koreans? Or just for themselves?
No. Those were just for themselves. Oh. The North Koreans didn't ask.
Well, that's too bad. That could have been a cooperation opportunity.
Yeah, that could be.
Cross-cultural.
Yeah. Yeah. They were immensely curious about us. Mm. And they seemed to know what's happening in China.
They were well informed, do you think?
Yeah.
Like, who's they? Like, the employees at the hotel? Or?
No, our tour guides. We actually have three tour guides for 12 people.
Wow.
And that doesn't count the Chinese guide. So we actually have four. There were two ladies who spoke Chinese, and one guy who spoke only English.
Oh, okay. And did the Chinese people in your group speak English, or?
No. Oh. No. So I spent some time talking with the English-speaking guide.
Ah, okay. So you had him to yourself.
Yeah.
Thanks to your great language skills.
Yes.
Which I think we talked about last time we had this talk on the podcast.
Yeah.
All right, well... What else did you do? I mean, I know it's North Korea, everybody's super interested in North Korea. Whenever I tell them I went,
yeah.
I've got all kinds of stories. But
yeah.
I don't know, I'm interested in hearing like all the places that you went, because you traveled quite a lot. So where did you go after North Korea?
Then I hopped on a bus across the border to Vladivostok.
Okay.
In Russia. And then from there, I took a 7-day non-stop train all the way to Moscow.
You're crazy. In Trans-Siberian.
Yeah.
So did you get off the train at all in 7 days?
Yeah, well, we did. There were long stops all the time for like 40 minutes. We could even get out of the station. Except for that, we did a non-stop.
Wow.
We were sort of, because I was not that confident or of like negotiating all the procedures in Russia. Actually, Russian railways had a rule that if you book a 7-day trip, you could simply stop somewhere and go back a few days later without paying more.
Without buying a visa, you mean? Or
without paying more money.
Oh, for the train?
For the train.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
But so you just bought one ticket straight through, though?
Yeah.
Okay. Katie and I have been talking about this for a while, going on the Trans-Siberian, but we would take a few weeks and stop along the way.
I think that's way better.
Why did you go non-stop?
It was in part because money, because it was so cheap. I spent just 8,000 rubles, which is $120 for the 7-day
train. In a week, you spent $120.
Yeah, for that.
Yeah, that's pretty cheap.
Yeah, that's really cheap. And there was a Brazilian friend who already bought his ticket.
All right.
So I had an English speaking company, and I was happy to go along.
Now, do they give you a bed on these trains, or do you have to sleep on the floor or on a chair? What is it?
It was a bed. It was actually quite good.
Huh. All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. So you had a nice bed in North Korea and a nice bed on a Russian train.
Yeah. But I would say, well, later I did, and in this long trip, after the 7 day on the train,
yeah,
I did another 2 days on the train. And then in Turkey, I did 2 days on the train again. And from Georgia to Armenia, I did one night on it. Later, I would just from Moscow, from St. Petersburg to South Russia, I tried the Russian third class again, and I thought it was horrible.
What is it? Surf class?
Third class.
Oh, cert.
Cert. Not surf.
Not like surf Russian class. Surf. Whoa, it must be cold.
Maybe it was surf class way before.
For all you knew. Yeah. So cert, like certification?
Cert.
For what?
Third class.
Cert for what?
Well, first class, second class.
Oh, third. That's third. What you're saying. Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry.
Third class.
My bad. I misunderstood you. Okay. Okay, so you took Russian third class.
Yeah.
What train was your favorite? What country?
Turkey.
Turkey? And did you take basically...
By far.
Did you take the same level of class for each train, or were you on like the first class?
I was
like,
on first class.
Oh, okay. So it's not really a fair comparison.
It wasn't fair, but it was so nice because the price was actually similar to a Russian third class, Turkish price.
Okay.
And if you buy a first class in Turkey, they usually have two beds in the same cabin. If you buy one of those, they'll simply not sell the other one. So you always get your privacy.
Oh, wow.
And you have a little mirror, a basin.
Yeah.
And a fridge. And
a
desk.
Oh.
In your own cabin, and you even get free food. If you are in the right car, you get free Wi-Fi.
Holy cow. That's like an apartment.
Yeah.
That's like...
Yeah.
That's really nice. And there's only one bed? Or you said there's two beds, but they only use one of them?
Yeah. If you are just one person,
they'll
just use one of those.
Wow. Because, I mean, like, I've taken a lot of trains in China, especially.
Yeah.
I've only done the highest level once, the soft sleeper. Yeah. And even there, you've got four beds in a room.
Yeah, yeah. I did it once from Beijing to Guangzhou.
Yeah.
It's way worse than the Turkish one.
Wow, and I thought that was really nice, the soft sleeper in China.
Yeah, and the Turkish train was just... It was a 24-hour ride. And my private cabin cost me just 110 liras, which is $30.
$30?
Yeah.
$30. So now we're talking less money than a really cheap hotel in the United States.
Yeah, and the beds are actually as good as the top hostels in Istanbul.
Wow.
Or Moscow.
You get to cross the whole country for that money.
Yeah, wow. I got to cross half the country.
Wow. So did you go like to Cappadocia or what did you do?
It was from Ankara to Kars, right on the border with Armenia.
Huh. And what did you do in Turkey, besides take the train?
I hopped around Turkey. Turkey was so nice. It has just that amazing diversity of both culture and landscape. Okay. I spent 15 days in Istanbul and went all the way to Selçuk. That's a location of Efes, one of those best preserved Greek ruins.
Hmm.
I think it's Greek, no, not Roman.
Okay.
And then from there I hopped on a bus to Cappadocia.
Yeah. And did you do one of the balloon rides?
No.
Too much money.
I did watch them set off all the balloons early in the morning.
Yeah.
And they said it was good, you could be good to hike around the valley. So I came out in the dark. And got the entire valley to myself.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I haven't been to Turkey, but I've seen many pictures of Cappadocia or Cappadocia, however you say it.
Cappadocia.
Okay, Cappadocia with a hard C. So yeah, the pictures look amazing, and if anyone listening hasn't seen them, just go look it up. I'll maybe put a link. It looks like otherworldly, like lunar landscape kind of thing.
Yeah.
Except there's always hot air balloons in the pictures.
But those add to the charm, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And
Turkey sounds awesome. Now, I need to bring this up. They've had like several problems with terrorism in the last year or so. Did you feel in danger at all, or were you okay?
I knew this before I entered Turkey, and I evaluated all those. As a frequent traveler, I read the travel alerts from different governments once in a while, and especially if I go to enter a new country to stay for a rather long period, like 1 month. And so before I entered, I evaluated the whole situation. I thought it was good. But during my last days in Istanbul, the first bombing during Ramadan happened.
Oh, okay.
It killed several policemen, and it was not as big as what would happen later.
Yeah, and you were in the city. Wow.
Yeah, I was in the city.
And what was it like? Was it just chaos everywhere, or did...
No, it didn't feel anything. Nobody in Turkey, nobody in my hostel told me about that. It was only half a day later that one of the friends I met in Russia told me.
Hmm.
If she didn't, then I would still have to wait for one day more to know this news.
Oh, to read the internet, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So what? It seemed kind of like life as usual.
You know? Yeah, yeah, it was life as usual because, as I read, later, the Turkish government did some job to control the news.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was because of that I didn't know, but apparently all the people at the hostels already knew from there.
I mean, I guess it is a big enough city that you could easily have some incident happen in one corner, and if you're far from there, then you wouldn't know anything.
Yeah.
So it's not like the whole place goes on lockdown.
Yep. And then right after the incident, I got alarmed, and I got all those visits to busy places out of my schedule, and basically I restricted myself to a few tourist sites, and then I left for South Turkey.
So you actually modified your itinerary
because a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay. I guess you still. How long did you stay in Istanbul? Still, like
I remember, it was about 15 days.
Yeah, it's quite a long time to stay in a city, in any city. So.
I usually like big cities.
Oh, okay. Yeah, when I travel, I'm more of a. I more like the little towns and places out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Currently, I live in Beijing, and there's always people around. It's just so huge, and it's just good to get away from all the people for me.
Yeah, yeah.
The thought of going to another big city, it's like makes me kind of cringe.
Yeah, now it makes me cringe for a little bit.
Ah, okay.
But I still think big cities are necessary for me, and. Whenever I think of going to a smaller place, it would usually mean that I will spend more money because there won't be any hostels.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
So where did you go after Turkey?
After Turkey, I did Georgia and Armenia.
Yeah.
Two small and nice countries.
Yeah.
One amazing thing was that from Ankara, I ended up in cars by the train. It was close to an ancient capital of Armenia, but which was like the attraction that's big enough to draw a lot of people to cars, but cars was still very isolated. I was on the last day, last 2 days of my Turkish visa. I had to get on a bus to Georgia.
Oh, before your visa expired?
Yeah,
you had to get
before my visa expired.
Okay.
And so it felt quite tense because I went with two Turkish friends to all the bus offices in town. They just didn't have the non-stop bus to Georgia the next day.
So you had to find a bus then?
Yeah, I had to find a bus.
Ah. And did you have trouble with it? Or?
I felt really in danger. And then...
In danger how?
Of like not being able to leave Turkey on time.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a tour guide in the city, and I don't know how, but he happened to knew that an Iranian bus will stop at a gas station 30 minutes from town the next morning. Yeah. He basically drove me to the gas station to hop on the Iranian bus, and the bus carried me all the way through a little known border check to Georgia.
And it actually came on time, and you made it no problem?
No.
No?
What? No problem at all.
Oh, no problem. And it was an Iranian bus.
Yeah.
Wow. And, remind me again, Wang Yi, how old are you?
I'm 22.
22?
Yeah.
God, you're doing some adventurous things at 22.
Yes.
Hopping
thank
on
you.
Iranian tour buses and getting rides from random dudes in Turkey.
Yeah.
Hoping to make it to the border with Georgia.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really cool.
It was like a trust game.
Yeah, that's a huge part of travel for sure. Trusting other people.
Yeah.
You, at some point, you have to rely on others.
Yeah.
Unless if you that's if you're traveling on a budget, at least. I guess a lot of people travel and they spend a lot of money and they still trust the person, but they pay them a lot. They pay a guide or someone to take them around.
Yes.
Hmm. Okay, so you went into Georgia. How was Georgia?
It's different than what I thought, what the information I got before. Because I spent a long time in traveling in Russia. And almost all the Russians I met have a romantic complex about Georgia.
Like they think it's theirs, or
they think it's so sweet. Every time you talk about Georgia with a Russian, you could see that little smile that came up on their face.
Uh-huh. So they have, okay, that's the romantic notion.
Yeah, that's...
And are there Russians actually in Georgia?
Yeah.
And
I met a few. And I still don't know why. I'm still yet to figure that out, but most of Georgians, a lot of Georgians, maybe not most, speak good Russian.
Hmm.
We had a French friend who knew Russian, and she would converse so well with all the Georgians in Russian. Instead of English.
Hmm. Okay. But were the Russians still impressed, or were they disappointed? And how about you? What was your opinion?
I think the Russians are still, like, when they get there, I don't know. But I think they still feel impressed because the Georgian capital Tbilisi is it's like right in the middle of hill. Parts of it are on hills.
Okay.
And you rarely see a city like that in Russia.
Mm.
And maybe except for Crimea. Sorry, but this is subject to disputes, but
yeah.
But
we're talking about a lot of places where we have to watch what we say sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
North Korea, yeah. Russia, Crimea.
Yeah, but I'm not passing on this. I'm not saying about any judgments on those.
Yeah, yeah.
Like all the time.
Let's just get the facts.
Crimea is a travel destination for Russians all the time.
Hmm. All right.
Yeah. So let's go back to Georgia.
Yeah, let's go ahead.
Yeah. And what I felt was that Georgia was so run down.
Run down?
Yeah.
Alright.
There, you often see huge fractures,
yeah,
like in the middle of their buildings, and they would still use those.
Oh, these are like Cold War era
fissures,
kind of,
yes,
kind of structures.
Yeah. And
not safe then.
No, and on many streets you can see like whole whole sections of buildings like leaning inwards towards the street.
And people are still living in those buildings?
And they still live in those buildings.
God.
And when you peek into their corridors, you could see that it's dark.
Yeah.
So I would guess the living quality inside those buildings are sort of horrible.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Yeah, wow. And in a few places in the city, especially in tourist areas, they have huge iron structures that supports both sides of the streets. Those basically supports all the buildings on both sides of the streets.
Iron structures, like a skeleton kind of thing.
Yeah, like a skeleton.
Wow! Just to hold up these buildings that are going to fall.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah.
Huh. I wonder why they don't rebuild. Why build a new structure to hold up an old structure instead of just knock it down? And maybe it's a money thing.
Yeah, it's kind of. That's interesting, but the people are so resilient. Yeah. They live happy lives. I think Georgians are happy people.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Hmm. So what did you do after Georgia?
And then it was a return trip to Armenia.
Ah, Armenia. Yeah. And what did you think of Armenia?
I liked that small country, and it's I went only to their capital, Yerevan. It was hot when I visited, but it felt. Even though they were in a faraway place, it felt cosmopolitan because you got all those trendy-looking shops at the town center, and many Iranians came for their vacations in Armenia.
Mm.
It felt good, but because I stayed only in their capital, there weren't so many things for me to do.
All right.
Yeah.
But it was looked like a nice place to live and.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those hot digital nomad locations.
It is, huh?
Yeah.
Oh.
It is because of. The living expenses are low and it's quite comfortable in that city.
No, I guess that makes sense then.
Yeah.
Huh. So, is that kind of what you do when you travel, like digital nomad? Or are you more into just travel and not
like half and half.
You do a little bit of work on the road?
Yeah.
What kind of work do you do?
I've been making a few of my own apps, and I've been doing all the plannings for my own website.
Ah.
Those will be made public in, I don't know, maybe in half a year.
Oh, you don't have a website public yet?
Ah, okay. No, not yet.
Oh, well, let me know, and I'll have to get a link, and I'll check it out.
Yeah, thank you.
Cool.
Yeah.
And so this website is going to be for all the apps that you design?
Or what? Well, I'm having a few articles written about my travels.
Oh, okay.
And I have those new apps that are not mature enough to go into the app store or to become their own independent site.
All right.
Then I would host those on my own website.
Okay, so you're still working on them then?
Yeah, I'm still working on them.
Yeah, okay. Now, last time we talked, you were talking about going to back to the university.
Yeah.
And I thought I remembered you'd say Germany or France or Switzerland.
Yeah.
Did you go to any of those countries, or what happened?
I didn't end up going to one of those countries because my French visa was rejected before I left China.
Oh, all right. So France was out. Does that mean the whole Schengen zone is out? Or
yeah, that means the whole Schengen zone is out.
Got it. Okay. Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
And is Switzerland part of that too?
Yeah, Switzerland is part of that. Mm. And partially because of this, I don't have enough information on the European universities. And I also had a mistake in terms of planning. During my past trip, I should have received a verification about my status at the university I attended, which is UC Berkeley.
Yeah.
And I should have researched and found a European university in one of those countries before their deadline.
Wow.
So if I plan to enter a university in Europe, I should have already finished the whole procedure. I mean, if I want to enter a university by September or October this year, I should have already done all the job in May.
Oh,
I didn't do that.
And you were too late for
it. I'm too late for all those.
Ah, all right. So what did you decide to do then?
Instead of, I found a pretty amazing university in Moscow.
Oh, okay.
I'm spending at least half a year there.
You were going to spend half a year there?
Yeah, I'm actually leaving tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, good thing we're having this talk today.
Yeah.
So are you flying this time, or are you taking the train again?
I'm flying.
Yeah, all right. No more trains for you?
No more trains.
Or at least not 7-day trains.
No more third class.
No more third
class. Now if I want to buy a Russian train, I would get second class.
Ah, well, how many beds are in the second class cabins?
Four.
And third class? How many?
Well, it's like they 54, I think it's 54 beds for the whole car.
Oh, so it's not like a cabin.
They have four beds per section on one side, yeah, and two beds up and down on the other side.
Oh, all right. All right, so you're going to fly to Russia tomorrow.
Yeah.
Wow, you're really flying to Russia tomorrow. All right.
Yeah.
And you'll be in Moscow for 6 more months?
I'm spending one day there, and then I'm going to Turkey again for 1 week.
Oh, really?
Have a little vacation there and go back to Moscow.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you have some more spots in mind in Turkey?
Yeah. But it's really because I'm out of options.
What do you mean?
My budget is around $200 to $300 round trip flight from Moscow to the 7-day vacation place. Hmm. And I don't have enough documents to get the Schengen visa or to secure the Schengen visa.
Okay.
So the only countries left are Turkey.
Yeah.
Azerbaijan.
Who?
Iran.
Yeah.
And Lebanon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember you talking about Lebanon.
Yeah.
You're going there too?
I never thought about it, but Beirut sounds like amazing city,
yep,
because of its diversity, but it's also chaos, and I will have to spend 2 to 3 months in that big city of Moscow. later this year. I want a small town.
Oh, now you have my logic. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Not too many big cities.
Yes. Yeah. I think I'll fly straight to Bodrum, on the Aegean coast of southern Turkey.
Okay. You're not going to Azerbaijan?
No.
You don't hear much about Azerbaijan, however you say it.
No,
I don't meet many people who have been there.
No. It's as far away.
Yeah.
Second, there's not that much things to see, and the visa is very hard to get.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
For everyone. They don't have I don't think they have visa-free rules for most countries.
Maybe they're just their bordering countries, their neighbors.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. And just from this year, they started to give visa on arrival for China, South Korea, and a number of other countries, but not any of those Western Europe countries where you could fly to Azerbaijan for quite cheap.
Oh, so even though you could get in easily, it's still just hard to get there because it's far?
Because it's far.
And you're not allowed to fly into Western Europe, so then you can't even do like a layover kind of thing. No, that's too bad.
No, and it's still... And if I go there, it would be still... My plan would be still to stay in that big city of Baku, their capital.
Oh, which you don't want to do because you want to be because you're gonna have to be in Moscow.
It could be good to have a look at Azerbaijan because from what I read, Azerbaijan's economy is going well, and they're rich in oil.
Really?
Their average GDP is quite high.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
All right, so you're going to Moscow for a semester then? Or the whole school year?
I'm still thinking about that.
Ah.
I think it's just half a semester. Or one semester.
Okay.
Or even half a semester. They do modules. They do four modules per year. Maybe I'll do just one.
Oh, all right. So just a quarter.
Yeah.
So then what?
Then, most probably, I'm heading back to Berkeley.
Really?
Yeah.
Back, all the way back.
All the way back.
Are you still enrolled there?
No, I'm not enrolled.
But you could get back easily enough, or what?
Yeah, I could get back easy enough.
Huh. Okay, so you'll finish your degree in Berkeley.
Yeah.
Huh, somehow I thought you just didn't want to be there anymore.
No.
But maybe now that you're a little older and more mature. I remember you told me, like, you did nothing but study.
Yeah, because I was able to do nothing but study. It was because that's what I did. That's what I learned to do when I grew up in China.
Oh, so the school system here in China taught you, like, study, study, study.
Study, study. And I was actually able to do nothing else. And when I was attending this high school, and especially elementary school in China, I was always being bullied.
Oh.
And I had no way to fight back. And I had no way to turn around. And later there was this mechanism inside me that I feared to make new contacts, new friends, whenever I'm in a new environment.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
Wow. So you were treated very badly. And then you went to Berkeley initially still with that attitude, right? Like, you hadn't... Was that the first time you ever left China? Your first time in Berkeley?
Yeah.
Ah, so you didn't know anything else.
Yeah.
Okay, and now it sounds like you're learning more. It's really cool. It's like really admirable that you're using travel kind of as a way to meet people and become more social.
Yeah. Yeah, one amazing thing about traveling is that a lot of people are like me. And we meet up, we would simply go to a hostel to meet up with the people, and then we would go to bars. And whenever we got to a hostel that where we could meet new friends, we were so happy.
Yeah.
And we would go out with them. And to make this even more suitable for me, you're going to spend only 1 week at most with those people.
Yeah.
So every once in a while during your long trip, you're starting a small social environment fresh.
Mm-hmm. Every few days. Yep.
So I was able to get enough opportunities to practice, and this fall in Russia in that Russian school could be seen as a opportunity for me to kind of hone my skills in forming longer relationships with people.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll have other people around you for much longer.
Yeah, and yeah. They are one of those more close-knit schools, mm-hmm. where you could meet other people quite easily, and they have a buddies program to pair Russian students with foreigners.
Ah, so you'll have like a big old bodyguard, Russian guy, like,
yeah,
protecting you.
Yeah.
Maybe with a Kalashnikov and
maybe
bottle of vodka. All right.
Yeah.
It sounds good.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was traveling, I remember running into this problem. Like, at first it was so awesome, like, just meeting all these people who had been all over the world and hearing their stories. It was really great. But over time, it started to wear me out. Like, after about 2 years straight of traveling, I was like, I was kind of sick of just meeting people and only knowing them for 3 days.
Yeah, I have the same feeling right now.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and the other thing is that whenever I end up in a big city, I would go to work from my computer in one of those co-working spaces. And that's a different kind of environment to meet people.
Oh, so these co-working places, they are kind of social?
They are kind of social, but they're not doing that well.
Hmm.
But it's still kind of social. It's one of those environments that are hard to get socialized because all the people are spending all the time working. You don't know when they are going to finish. And when they finish, maybe they'll run straight away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that makes perfect sense. I mean, they're not there to meet people. That's what I thought. They're just there to work on their laptop. And
yeah, but you could still sometimes say hi, say hello all the time.
Yeah, okay.
And quite often people are happy to make an introduction and get to know each other.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, my only experience with one of these places was in India. I was there a few months ago, and in Delhi, I met some friends in one.
Yeah,
and we had like a long meeting at this table to talk about this project that this friend was working on. But I remember it being a really nice space, and at this particular one, they served beer and they had like a full restaurant, and I mean they had coffee too.
Yeah,
so I think a few people were actually talking and doing these kind of meetings, like business-style meetings.
Yeah.
But a lot of people there were just solo. And you could tell they didn't want to be bugged. They just wanted to come in and do their work and leave.
Actually, I feel that many people are thinking that we should be able to get more social in those co-working spaces. Very often, there's just not a very obvious way to get social in that environment.
Huh, so maybe this is something for all of you co-working space owners or potential ones,
yeah,
something to work on, like a yeah, like a room, maybe a separate room where, okay, this is the social room, and or maybe you put the bar in one room.
Actually, I've been to two co-working spaces.
Yeah,
where there are bars.
Okay. By. And were those more social?
No.
No. Nothing sadder than someone drinking alone on their laptop around other people drinking alone.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Well, it's just the kind of people who use these places are, they're not the most social to begin with. You know, they're kind of like digital nomad or like loner people and working on, you know, software, developing apps, developing something.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so you almost have to go that extra mile to help them make friends or whatever. Like, almost need to employ someone who could do. I was gonna say team building exercise.
But, actually,
something like that.
When I was in Guangzhou, there was this amazing co-working space, and they are the most sociable one. I think they have someone responsible for all the social activities.
Oh, all right. Huh. Well, there's an idea to kind of help improve these places.
Yeah, and once in a while, I think it's every other week, we'll have our members to give 15-minute speeches on their insights, what they've done and what they're doing. And after that, we go to a nearby restaurant to get a dinner together.
Oh, okay. That sounds fun.
Yeah.
Huh. It's like you're giving miniature podcasts. Like,
yeah.
Like all of them give them.
Yeah.
Like what we're doing now.
Yeah.
Except you're broadcasting to the whole world, Wang Yi. Everyone will hear this.
Thank you for getting me here.
Yeah, no problem. And speaking of lunch, we should go grab lunch. It's about noon now.
Yeah.
Yesterday we had, I thought, a very good lunch, Hui Guo Rou.
Yes, you got it right.
Yeah.
I like it. That's one of my favorite dishes in China.
It is? Oh, yeah. I just thought I'd throw it out there. I didn't know that. It's like, for those who don't know, it's like a twice-cooked pork. It's really bacon.
Yeah.
Yeah, bacon, very flavorful, mixed with rice.
Yes.
For 15 kwai. It's like a little over $2 for a nice big meal.
Yeah.
What do you want to do today?
I don't know. We had a random pick.
So many options. There's pulled noodles. There's you know, there's Xinjiang food. Chinese food is just awesome. For those who don't know, many many times when I've recorded these podcasts, we've talked about the food because it's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. How about this? We're going to go to a restaurant of your choice because it's your last day in China.
Yeah, and I'll get really picky today.
Okay, get really picky. Choose a nice restaurant. We'll go and we'll take a picture of us and then the food.
Okay.
And that'll be the top picture on this podcast.
Okay, we'll do
so
that.
So everybody can see what we ate.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's go do it. Thanks for joining and see you next time, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For more information, you can visit my website, 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number 1000daysbetween.com. From there, you can sign up to get updates from this podcast delivered directly to your inbox. Remember, the Around the World podcast is all about meeting ordinary people who have done extraordinary things. Thanks for listening.